So last week I put up a picture. You kind of talk the language, the communication lingo for communication technology, that thing which I put up was a pic rather than a picture. Okay? So, I mean, if that's where you're at, whatever, I put it up there, okay, last week. And now what I'd like to do, and I'd like to ask you some questions to see what recollection you may have. Now, you may be thinking, I wasn't here last week. Well, you may know this stuff too, okay? So I'm still going to ask the questions and see how we do. So the pic I put up was this, okay? Now, this is a pic. Do you recall this? Okay, that's good. We're together so far. Whew, that's good. The picture is commonly thought to have been done by Vincent van Gogh, but it was actually done by a different painter whose name was... How are we doing so far on this? Edvard Munch. Okay. Got it. There you go. And by the way, there's the photo. Which is who? Who's this one? That's Van Gogh. And who's that? That's Munch. Okay? And you notice they both did self photos here, and those self photos, sort of portraits, I guess, kind of look alike. As a matter of fact, somebody did this and kind of took that and this, because actually he's kind of learned from him. And his pictures kind of reflect a lot of the same stuff. Now, I told you that this thing was sold, okay? It was sold in May of 2012. And it was sold at this place. So, how'd you say it? Say it again. Sotheby's. I heard several, I think. Okay, well, that's it. It was this. And it sold at it sold at the highest price that a painting has ever been auctioned off for. How much? Lot? We're not doing too well recollecting here. $120 million by Leon Black of New York. He bought that. You know, this thing has value. This is so valuable. But why? What is it about that thing that makes it so pricey? I mean, look at this thing. The highest priced painting ever. You know, Alita and I had a little break in January, and we went to the Indianapolis Museum of Art, and we went into a display area, and I looked up, and it was like, it was amazing. I mean, I walked around the corner and I looked up, and there was this display, and it was a painting, and it looked like the people on it were standing there. They were actually, it was two young girls who were standing by a bureau in their flannel nightgowns, and they were looking off, and it was like, oh, so real. And I walked up to it, and I looked at it, and it was a texture painting, and up close, but back far, and it was like, well, I can see why that, but this? Now, some of you are thinking, oh, well, you're a realist, and I'm an impressionist, or whatever, okay, whatever. Come on, look at that thing. Well, What is it that makes it so? Have you ever seen this picture before? How many have seen this picture before? Yeah, it's been brown there pretty good. Yeah, you see it. Well, let me say this. I want to show you something here. Look at this. Seen that before?
Where do you think they got it?
That's exactly right. He is exactly right. That is exactly right. What is this coming from? What makes this thing worth $120 million? And what makes this thing so... Three of these. Home Alone. It's right there. It's that sense of angst. It's the sense of panic. It's the sense of... that people relate to in what happens in life. I mean, this guy, that's to be a look of panic, home alone, right? What am I going to do with this? What's coming now? That's what this is. As a matter of fact, if you look into this guy's life, He did that piece in a whole series called The Frenzy of Life, in which he had paintings that were anxiety, paintings that were melancholy. This one was called, what? Scream. Yeah. And he was talking about this angst of life, this, what I call it, a gust. That's what I think would be better. It's kind of a combination word. It's kind of like anxious caused by disgust, kind of panic at what's going on. Yeah. That's what makes this thing so popular. $120 million. Most everybody in here has seen it at one time or another. What makes it valuable? By the way, I wasn't the first one that came up with that, and the idea where they got it from is exactly right. This morning on Easter Sunday, I'm going to talk about something that is a whole bunch better. A whole bunch better. You know, maybe some of the panic that we would have in life would happen or be relieved if we could draw a picture and have it sold for $120 million, right? That would relieve a lot of panic for me. That would be good. Well, I want you to know that he did that picture in 1893, and it sold for that price in 2016. He never saw it. He never saw that. He was gone 100. That picture was 119 years after it was done. So the drawing didn't help him. Neither would the $120 million. There's something that God talks about that has to do with this that will help relieve that angst, that panic. And it's something that is a whole bunch more probable to happen for you than to you draw a picture and have it sell for $120 million. Have it sell for 20 cents. Come on. A whole bunch more probable to happen. And it's entirely possible, and it is readily available for you. And you can find it from God's voice there in Philippians chapter 3, verse 7. Would you turn there with me? Philippians chapter 3, verses 17 through 12 is where we're going to look. On this Easter Sunday morning, we're going to be talking here about something that can entirely possibly take place for you. Something that is more valuable than this drawing. Something that is readily available. Okay. I want you to know this is not far away theological conversation. This isn't something that God intends for us to be in on. And you can. And it's available. And it's possible. The Apostle Paul is writing here what God showed him, and God can show you. Zero in with me on verse number 8, where he says this, Philippians 3:8. Indeed, Paul says, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth, the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For his sake, I've suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish, in order that I may gain Christ and be found in him. We're going to talk on Easter Sunday morning about this. The surpassing worth of knowing Christ. There's value to this. Value that exceeds everything, the Apostle Paul says. There is worth here. And it is available. And it is entirely possible, and you can have it. Unlike the possibility of having a drawing sell for $120 million, there's only one person I know that ever happened to. And he, well dead before it took place, at that price. This is impossible. This is possible. And it will displace the panic, the anxiety, the uncertainty, if you go with it. The Apostle Paul talks about it, and we're going to look at it with these things in mind. We're going to be talking about the surpassing worth. What is that? What are you talking about? And number two, we're going to talk about knowing Christ and how we know Christ, because that's what the Apostle Paul focuses on here. First of all, this surpassing worth, this surpassing value. The first thing I want you to know is the Apostle Paul uses business terms here. He uses accounting language. This is, some of us have had this kind of experience, exposure to accounting. These are actual words. And the words that he uses here, when he says, whatever was gained for me. Now, he had some things that he considered to be gain. These are things that are good. They profit me. These are things that are a plus for me. And the Apostle Paul in verses 4 through 6 lists some of those things. As a Hebrew with that Jewish mindset, he tells some of the things that he was and that he had and that he did. Stuff that he had done. Stuff that he had engaged in. And all that stuff that he was doing, he thought, this is good. This really makes me better. It's a plus on my side of the equation. So, he had that, counting terms, listed out there. And he goes on then and tells us that this stuff, verse 7, this stuff, whatever I had that was gain, I considered it again. I thought about it again. Let me kind of move us away from Paul with his Jewish Hebrew thinking then, and bring it up to today in regards to what our thinking now would be about gain. Something that's profitable. It's a plus for me. You know, right now, in our location, we are in the middle of spring break. You know that? We are. School here is out. And folks here in town, some of them are gone because it's spring break. Now, what's so great about having spring break? What's so great about that? Now, I know Ball State had theirs a few weeks ago, and others have had theirs here and there, and Taylor was out. I don't think they're out right now. But what's so great about spring break?
I get to spend more time with my grandkids.
Okay, there you go. I get to do what I want. And what I want is with my grandkids. I get away from the duty. I get away from the routine. I get away from what I have to do to what I get to do because I want to do. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's what's kind of great about spring break. It's a diversion. As a matter of fact, it's a break from the routine. When the weather gets nice, it's supposed to be 70 degrees today here in the middle of spring break. Not rain until later, but not right now. Okay. So that's some pretty good stuff. And I get this break. It's a diversion. It's escape. And do we like diversions? Oh, do we pay for diversions? $120 million? More than that. Do you know how much some of those football players make? And why? Because this is such a major contribution to pass that ball so many yards and make a cross over the line when somebody tries to keep you from cross this line. No, you can cross this line. Go ahead. Cross this line. Yeah. Whoa. That's a big thing, right? Whoa. It's a diversion. It's a diversion. That's all. It's a break from the routine. Do we like breaks? Well, I talked about my wife and I going on a break. We have a break Friday after Friday. We get out this movie. Anybody seen a movie? Anybody have a movie at home? How many have one? How many have more than one? How many have, like, I was talking to somebody the other day. They said, I probably had 100 movies. Yeah. These are diversions because this is valuable to us. This is a plus. This is a gain for us. Huh. And the Apostle Paul talks here about what was gain for him. Verse 7. But whatever gain I had, I count it as loss for the sake of Christ. Now, what Paul had done wasn't bad. The diversions weren't bad. Just recently, I saw Everest. That was very interesting. It was a good diversion. And then we looked at Sherlock Holmes, this new Sherlock Holmes that came out. That was pretty good. And what this wasn't bad, but it's just how we're considering it. Look at what he says, verse 7. All of that stuff that was gain, I counted as loss. Indeed, he said, I count everything as loss. So we just looked at this illustration about taking a break. And the loss here that he talks about is it was no gain compared to Jesus Christ's provision for us. He says, I count it all loss. None of this is a benefit. There is no profit. There is no plus for me. There is no gain compared to Jesus Christ. Whoa, now that's a little bit different way of thinking. I mean, theological destructions, conversations about Jesus Christ come up on Easter, and when I kind of have talks with someone about the Bible or around here, D-bands. But he's saying, none of it, whatever's in the plus column, it isn't necessarily bad, none of it that's in the plus column is valuable compared to the provision of Jesus Christ. That's what he's saying. Okay, so now we need to talk about something else. We need to talk about this loss column, because he still continues the language of business accounting, and he said, this is on the loss side. This is a deduction, verse 8. He goes on. Indeed, I count. That's the accounting word. I account. Just like you take care of your checkbook. Well, some take care of their checkbook. Just like you follow your credit card some. I count everything as lost because of the surpassing value, the surpassing worth of knowing Jesus Christ, my Lord. Whoa. Let me ask a question here from this. What does everything include? Okay, let's ask it this way. What does everything exclude? Nothing. Everything. Your diversions, your work, your actions. You're doing good to someone else. All of it is on the minus side compared to the provision that Jesus Christ gives. That's what he's saying. He says, I count it this way. This is the accurate accounting. I count everything on the minus side because of the surpassing worth of knowing Jesus Christ. This supersedes everything. This is the supreme. Knowing Jesus Christ. All else is on the minus side, comparatively speaking. Whoa. Now, let's talk about this thing, the surpassing value of Jesus Christ. When he uses this word surpassing value, he talks about, and the word is hooper. Echo? And what he does here is he takes two words and he puts them together to get an idea. And the idea is that you grab a hold of something and you hold on to this above everything else. That's what the word means. Hooper, echo. You can't get a picture of it. You know, hoops, like basketball. Ball. Anybody had basketball diversion here lately? Basketball, you know. IU, North Carolina, IU goes down. Who goes up? You hold on this. Hooper, echo. You hold on this above everything else. I hang on to this. This is the succeeding, the surpassing, the over everything value of Jesus Christ. Now, let me illustrate this. I want to illustrate this with a thing from today. This is a true account, and I've got to try to bring this down. So let me just say it this way. You'll understand this from our diversion movies based on a true story. Okay? You get that? So, I'm doing this because it'd take time to go through it, but I want you to just get the impression of this thing. And here's the impression. There were some folks who were overseas working in an area, missions, good thing. And as they were over there, they kept having these pesky monkeys come in and stealing stuff. They were close to the rainforest. Papua New Guinea kind of thing. And they were there and these pesky monkeys kept coming and stealing their stuff. And they couldn't catch them. They couldn't corner them. They were just like so fast. Kind of like trying to catch a fly. Now you have to learn how to catch a fly, right? You know, it's, but you hit it sometimes even with a fly swatter. So they couldn't get these pesky monkeys. So what they came up with is these monkeys loved nuts, these kind of nuts there that they had. So they took a coconut, dried coconut nut there, and they hollowed it out, got the milk out, put this nut inside of it, and they put a hole there that was big enough for the monkey to get their hand into and come and steal those nuts. And then they took these coconuts and they fastened these coconuts to stakes in the ground. And then when the monkeys came raiding the bands, they found these coconut kind of things, you know, and in there was that nut, and they grabbed that thing. But when they grabbed it, they made a fist. And their fist was too big to get back out of the coconut hole. So, but they wouldn't let it go. Above everything else, they held on to that nut stuff in the coconut. Not letting it go. And you know what? They came back. There were the monkeys. And they, with the monkey problem. You see, it's pretty nuts, some of the stuff that we hold on to above Jesus Christ, the provision that God makes us in Jesus. But we're determined sometimes to hold on to, and you know, it varies. For different people, the thing that they hold on to varies. It's different. Some it's this practice, some it's this habit, some it's this particular relationship, some it's this, and I need to have this thing, and this is on my plus side, and this is good, this is gain. But hanging on to it above the provision of Jesus Christ means it is total negative column. It is loss. And right thinking is to say, I count all of it on the negative side. Because of the surpassing worth, because of the holding on above everything else to knowing Jesus Christ. That's the surpassing worth. That's what he's talking about. That's the what here. And now we need to talk about this. How? How, you know, I mean, that's exactly what the Apostle Paul goes into here. How we know Jesus Christ. The word that he uses here for knowing him is this word gnosko, which is a Greek word that means you know by personal experience. You get to know by personal experience. When I was at Kent State University, I was there as a student. You know how students are. They usually don't have any money. Went to school and you know, you do something that you think you ought to, but you don't want to trade off school time and this other valuable nut stuff time that you need to do. So, you know, you don't really want to trade all that off. So you kind of get a job. So I worked for a little while in the president's office, the president of Glenn A. Olds, president of Kent State University. Spelled just like the car, not with the mobile in the end, but just the first part. Olds, Glenn A. Olds. And I knew him. As a matter of fact, he came in once and they said, oh, this is your new office boy, Tom. Well, I said, hello, Tom. And then he went off and did his thing. So I knew him. I mean, I was introduced to him, you know. As a matter of fact, he even had me do this assignment that he gave these big notebooks that he had to take around to the trustees of the board at Kent State University. So I drove Akron and Canton and all around taking these books to people's houses. And I knew all of them. Well, some of them came to the door. Most of them didn't come to the door. Somebody else came to the door. But, you know, so you know by being... But you don't know personally. I mean, I found out some stuff about Glenn A. Olds. I found out that he writes in purple ink, so everybody knows that he was the one that wrote this on the stuff. This is Glenn's writing here. Okay? And I know that he used to get so tired of being in the office sometimes that he wanted to do something physical, so he would go move boxes around just so he could do something physical. Okay. But I knew about him some stuff, but I didn't know him. You know what I mean? He's talking about knowing Jesus Christ by a personal experience. That I may know him, he said. It's a personal experience. It's a personal experience that John talks about when you receive him. You trust him with your life. You take him to yourself. Just like you receive a package that comes in the mail, you take it to yourself and you open this thing and you look into it. That's what he's talking about with Jesus Christ. You receive him that way and you trust him and you spend time with him. You look into this package and you get to know him and you know what he's like. Not something somebody tells you about. He writes with purple ink and he gets tired of sitting around, so he does stupid stuff for a little bit to get some extras. No, you know him and what he's like. That's this gnosko. That's how it happens when you intentionally decide, I'm going to take Christ for my life because the value of this supersedes everything else I hang on to. That's when that happens. That's when it happens. You know him. And then he says, you know him and the power of his resurrection. Woo! I wish I could just kind of pause this whole thing. And to let you know, I just love this part of the truth that God tells us here. Because this thing is like so supernatural. It's like it's available. It's possible. It's more probable than you drawing a picture and selling it. But it's supernatural. Because there is power here that doesn't take place in this natural world. It's beyond the supernatural. And it is what this day is supposed to be about. The power of the resurrection. That I may know him possibly and availably in your life now. I may know him personally and the power of his resurrection. That is the power to raise up out of the dead. When he talks about the power here, he uses a word that we get dynamite from. This is the explosive power that moves mountains that seem impossible. It's like boom. That's the power that he's talking about. That you know him and this power of his resurrection. Listen to me. This is real. This is a power that raises to life out of the dead. It happened in the past when Jesus came up. It happens today to people in their lives. They are changed people by the power of the resurrection. Just yesterday at the wedding, I was talking with Alita about the changed life of a person that we knew there because of the resurrection. When that person intentionally decided that Jesus is valuable, stopped hanging on to what they wanted to hold on to, and let it go for this exceedingly, exceedingly surpassing value of God's provision in Christ, they were changed. And it happens. It happens from the inside out. It's happened to me. I can go around the room and point out people in this room and I can say it happened to them when. and I talk about the experience that they had, and the power of the resurrection changed their life. They began to walk in a new life that had no angst to it. Less august anxiety caused by disgust over this. It displaces it. It's gone. That's what he says. No Christ like this. How? And he says, the partnership of his sufferings.
Well, what is that? That doesn't sound too good. It's part of this how you know him.
When that happened to me and I came to know Christ, it was May 15th, 1975. Sitting in the Union at Kent State University. My eyes were open to the death of Jesus Christ paid for all my sin to God. It was paid for. It's done. He died for our sins once for all. He's buried. He rose again. The rising of Jesus Christ promises me life forever because my sin's gone. 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 And I remember hearing that. I remember going home and thinking, do I really want that? I kind of like what I'm holding on to. I kind of like this. I want this. My hand in the coconut held on to the nuts. I like this. So I debated back and forth. And then I began to see the events in this world that God said were coming down, because I actually started to look at what the Bible had to say. I looked at this package that he was telling us about. And I saw the events, and this world is moving exactly where God said it was going. And guess what? Whether I go with him or not, this world is going to... you fill in the blank. And I thought, huh. So I kind of let go. And man, I didn't know what I was in for. When I let go, woo, did we start a ride. One of these things, I kind of learned some of the stuff that the Bible said was coming down. And I thought, some other people ought to know about this. But you see, I had this thing in me where I wanted to be a smart guy. I didn't want to be one of those. You know what I mean? You got it? You got it. I didn't want to be one of those. I wanted to be smart about this thing. I wanted people to think, whoa, he's a smart guy. So I was hanging on to that nut thing. So this is what I did. I was writing with a friend of mine who had become a believer, actually influenced me to talking about Christ and looking. I was riding with him, and we were going up at Kent State University, and there was this guy who needed a ride. He was in the business school. I was in the business school. So we picked him up, and I thought I ought to talk to him about this stuff that's coming down, theological conversation. So this is what I said. I said, boy, the unfolding of the eschatological scenarios are really somewhat eye-opening, don't you think? And boy, he was so impressed. He said, huh? Well, my friend who was riding along with me, who was a believer, said, I don't think you got to him. Then I was sitting in a group like this where somebody was telling us about what the Lord was doing, and they read this passage. And when I came to you,
I did not come proclaiming to you the testimony of God with lofty speech or wisdom. For I decided to know nothing among you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling. And my speech and my message were not with plausible words of human wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and the power, so that your faith might not rest on the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. And I sat in that chair and I thought, is that to me or what? And I realized right there, I had to die to something in me. This nut of thinking, everybody think is, whoo, he's so smart. You know, that's something to live for. Let it go, man. Don't hold on to it above this. It's different for everybody. That was mine. Let it go. And you know then, the fellowship of his death. Let it go. Don't hold on to this. And you have this dying to you, which brings this, Paul, that I may know him, the power of the resurrection, the fellowship of his suffering, becoming like him in his death, that by the means possible, any means possible, I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. I rise up. This is where the power comes. When you know Christ personally like that, you, knowing him, see this power is for you. It can work. You join with him, and this thing you're holding on to that you've got to have, you let go. And the power of the resurrection operates to newness of life. Now, if I went around the room and I pointed out all these people who've gone this route, you'd think, oh my, they're perfect people now. You could look at me, for example. I'm a perfect person now. Right? Look at what Paul says right after this. Verse 12. Not that I've already obtained this, or am already perfect, but I press on to make my own, because Jesus Christ has made me his own. He has taken me, not because of what I've done, but because of what he's done. He has given me this perfection with God. And quite frankly, I can tell you this, I am perfect in God's eyes. I am perfect in God's eyes because I am in Christ who was perfect. I have that. I don't have much to do with this earpiece, but I have that. Brothers, I don't consider myself to have it, but I'm going with him. I'm going with him. Not already, yet completely, but I want you to know this. I'm on it. I have you this question on Resurrection Sunday. It's a day we ought to be in church. We ought to hear theological conversation. We ought to hear something about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But don't put it over there and you go back over here and keep hanging on to what it is that you want to hold on to above the provision of Jesus Christ. Can I ask you to this? Let it go, man. Let it go. Because if you don't let it go, you're going to forever regret that you didn't let it go. I'm saying that not because I don't like you, but because I do. Let it go. Hold on to Jesus Christ as surpassing worth. The provision is like out of this world. Okay, you got it. Theological conversation on Easter Sunday. But here's the fact. Christ did look beyond your faults to your need. And there's power available and possible for you.